The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Hey, everybody, come to you cordless. It's 11:02 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8:02 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 minutes after 2 p.m. at the Sydney Opera House in Sydney, Australia. And where the Vikings are playing the Bears, about five blocks away from here, it's 2 minutes after 10 p.m. in Minneapolis. I'm Jim Peters, and welcome to yet another edition of Jim Peters at Night. Edition, installment number 53, if I'm correct. I hope you guys had a good Thanksgiving. I took last week off entirety. Monday, I felt terrible, and I thought, let's just can this, you know, because what, you know, and I'm kind of glad I did, even though by Tuesday I was feeling better. You know, I didn't realize I haven't taken a full week off since we started. This is our 15th week, if I'm right. Like I said, it's our 53rd show. We started on July 31st. So, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving, as I said. Mine was, here's what I did. I ran around like an idiot for 3 days, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I don't know what it is with me. I'm 68 now. I'm way too old to be doing any of this shit. But I used to be the life of the party. Now I get overstimulated very easily. And I finally figured out that's what it is. It makes me really tired, but it's really literally too much stimulation. I got, you know, food and conversation, and I know you all got that, you know, everyone has it, except at 68 now, it's starting to become a little too much, and maybe it's because people expect too much of me. I've always kind of been the life of the party wherever I go, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it too, but any rate, by Sunday, I slept till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I did, you know, what the hell. Now, I guess we got a new thing going on here. I want to show you this. So, it's right here, this QR code. Now, we've used these in the past. If you have a phone on you and you're watching this on TV or on your computer or something like that, you can aim your phone at that QR code and it will immediately take you. Well, here's the deal. It used to take you to the page on our website where you could push the big call button to call in. But we came to the realization, well, that's stupid. Let's skip a step. Now, if you connect with that QR code, you go directly into the preview page for our virtual studio. You don't even go to our website at all. So you can talk to us on your phone with that thing. You will go to the preview page where you get to check your camera and mic, and then you're in the queue. It's as simple as that. It's really simple. And from that point on, it's basically like a FaceTime call, you know, or whatever. I don't know what they call it on Android, but everybody knows what I'm talking about, you know. And the good thing about this is that you don't have to worry about any of this stuff about your default web browser or anything like this. This circumstance goes around that. What's the word I'm looking for? I was going to say circumscribe. No, that's not right. Jim, get your mind out of the gutter. So anyway, give me a call tonight. We don't have any guests. I'm going to ramble on about some stuff. We got a new set. So it kind of reminds me of, now I'm going to date myself here. Johnny Carson moved from New York to Los Angeles in 1972. Most of the 30-year run on The Tonight Show, he had basically like fake windows in the background, you know. It was like looked like an apartment or whatever, and there were mostly photos. Occasionally, they would do pictorial drawings. But when he first moved to L.A., it was kind of this weird thing. They had basically painted scenes. There was no windows, nothing. It was just like two painted scenes that kind of matched each other, and they had all sorts of shit. Now, obviously, we're doing this in the middle of the night. Our normal background is downtown Minneapolis, but it's snowing here. It snowed, finally, on Saturday night. And the reason I say finally is because there was a lot of speculation that this would be the first November on record ever in 150 years where it did not snow in November at all. But we got a trace of snow on Saturday, about a quarter of an inch, enough to count. And that a little of that's still on the ground, kind of a dusting. So anyway, I changed this because I'm gonna just use this for the holidays through December. And I think I got to find one that's basically at night, some courier and I've seen or something. But at any rate, my giant head fits perfectly between these two trees that are covered with snow. And why does that matter? Because right now it's 14 fucking degrees here. I'm not kidding. It was 12 degrees this morning. And even from the frozen north of Minnesota, that's cold for November. It's supposed to warm up on Wednesday. Warm up, it means in the 40s. Okay, fine, you know. But still, right now, I just checked my phone just before we started here. It's 14 degrees outside. Oh, yeah, that's terrific. I did not leave the house today, even though I kind of was planning to. Screw it. Not going out. Can't do it. Also, if you're wondering, I just checked the score of the Vikings game. I'm not watching. I checked it on Google. They're in the middle of the second quarter, and it was the last I checked, it was 9-3 Bears. So anyway, that's going on too. So, the other thing I wanted to bring up about this little stupid set here thing about this actually came up on Saturday at a family gathering. About the fact, so I got a lot of nieces and nephews, you know, they're all basically under 21, you know, and probably you, a lot of you probably do too. Have you noticed they've now embraced everything that we did in the 70s that's ugly? And I brought this thing about Carson's setup because this is like maybe 15, 20 years ago now. My wife bought me a set of Johnny Carson DVDs. It was like, I can't remember how many shows. They're complete shows from his 30-year run, maybe like 100 of them or something like that. They were supposedly picked. They were the better ones. Somebody at Johnny Carson Productions picked them out. So anyway, I kind of sort of watched them in chronological order. And when I got to the ones from the 70s, where they had this particular set I was talking about, where it was not Windows, either fake or real, or looking real. It was basically like scenes. It was pull-down portraits, basically. The set was, I remember, my wife was walking through the living room. I'm watching this. I froze the picture. I said, look at this. Isn't that the ugliest fucking thing you've ever seen in your life? I mean, that set was so ugly. Plaids going everywhere. Colors, I mean, on no one's color wheel did this make sense. Nobody, no one, and anywhere. And now the kids are seeming to think this is kind of cool. I mean, I still remember having striped pants. I had striped pants. You know, we thought that was really neat. Ha, 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 that's fantastic. And you watch Carson and even the clothes from that era. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that myself. The first really good suit I bought an Emilio Zegna suit. This is in 1977 or 78, right? It's salmon colored. It has bell bottoms about the size of, you know, a toaster, and the lapels literally stuck out past my shoulders. Literally, I'm not kidding. And we thought this was the coolest goddamn thing ever. It's like just ugly as sin. Everything was ugly, and now we got kids trying to emulate the same thing. Well, bullshit. That's crap. Ugly's ugly, man. It's like, I don't know if the era or the time seems to make any difference, but you know, Carson, and then you had the enormously wide ties. There was like, they were like, basically like bibs, you know. Rosalind Carter died while we were gone this last week, you know, and so that brings up Jimmy Carter, and that was his era, you know, and I still remember, I mean, if you look at the pictures of him from that era, same thing, just really, really wide lapels and really, really wide ties. And I don't know. I don't think it's good. Yeah, and you know, let's talk about Carter for a second. You know, because the thing is, he's going to be erased from the 20th century. Well, it's not the 20th century anymore, but still, in the last 100 years, he will no longer go down as the worst president. Biden will. There's no doubt about that at this point. Absolutely none. And the other thing about Carter, even though most of his administration went spectacularly bad down, and I've said this before, he knew it was going bad. He was constantly asking people, what do we do? What do we do? What do you do? He did not try to dodge the issue. Whereas Biden gave another speech today on the supply chain. Jesus Christ. And, you know, and him and his economic team are still trying to tell people, you know, the economy's great. It's just you don't know that. Bullshit. Complete, utter bullshit. It's like he's wrong. The economy is not good. I do the shopping in my family. I know what's going on. Everyone else goes shopping too. We know what's going on. And now try to buy a house. Try that. You know, shit. You know, interest rates for mortgages are basically up 50% in the last 3 years. This has been a disaster, and they refuse to acknowledge it. They think everything's fine. And he goes on and on and on. I mean, he's a delusional man. You know, I've said this before, too. The problem isn't dementia. The problem isn't old age. The problem is his personality. He's always been like this. He's stupid, and he's delusional. I do not like this man. Unlike the Trump haters, I did not think that when he started. I thought, okay, let's see how this goes, you know. Well, then Afghanistan happened, and he refused to acknowledge that they fucked it up. He still does. He said, well, we had to do what we had to do. No, you didn't. You didn't have to do that. You didn't. You know, it's starting to make me want to pull my hair out. And that brings me to the top of the show tonight. And I named tonight's show, What the Fuck Are We Doing? If you saw this on Rumble or YouTube, I starred out the F word. Because I can say that here, but I don't want to, you don't want to alienate people putting on a headline. Or them either. Yeah, I've said this before. I just assume at some point we're going to get kicked off YouTube. I assume that. You know, they don't like people like me. You know, I'm just going under that assumption. But we'll ride it as long as we can. You know. But yeah, what the fuck are we doing? And what I meant is that over the weekend, over the long weekend, I saw a couple things on TV where people were talking about the fact that Americans seem to have lost their sense of purpose. And this is true. Now, but the question is why? I heard a couple of things saying it was because we've lost touch with the religion. And that might be true, although I don't think religion drives all purpose. I don't think it does. I think a lot of it, forgive me if I'm wrong about this, a good deal of it anyway, is personally driven. Humans have a need to accomplish stuff. You know, so you saw that intro we ran there. Those are some drone flying around downtown Minneapolis. We built all those buildings. You know, I'm not using we in the way that Barack Obama said when he famously said we built. You know, you didn't build that. Oh fuck you! It's like I'm saying the opposite. We built that stuff. You know, humans have. We've changed the landscape, and I know there's a lot of people, and the show's going to be about tomorrow. You know, once again, we got people going on and on about climate change. They're having a climate change summit in Dubai. And it's just, folks, I can't tell you this enough. It's just a grift. This climate change thing is the single most dishonest thing that's happened in America in 50 years. There's no emergency. Matter of fact, it's not that the climate isn't changing. See, this is the thing. There is a kernel of truth to every lie everyone espouses. The temperature of the Earth is rising. It's risen 3 degrees Fahrenheit in the last 300 years. Like Dr. Patrick Moody, who was the guest on the show a couple months ago, he said this very, very succinctly. During those 300 years, during the first half of it, there was no industrialization. You can't blame humans. And that's because So it turns out, I'm going to give you just a little primer here. The reason the climate changes, the reason the world is warming up has, and I can't remember, that it starts with an M. It's named after a Russian scientist. Basically, the solar system affects the wobble of the Earth's revolution around the sun, kind of the same way the moon reflects tides on Earth, the ocean tides, kind of the same thing. It's kind of the same. So, you know, we have two especially large bodies in the solar system, Jupiter and Saturn, and how, and they're in different rotations, of course, and where they line up and how that happens reflects our distance from the sun. And that's the reason climate and temperature goes up and down. That's the reason. I'm not talking about a daily basis or even a yearly basis. This is a thing that has long-term effects. You know, this is the thing they don't tell you. It's not even climate change. It's a long-term weather cycle. And weather cycles can last up to 30,000 years. So that's what's going on here. There's nothing they can do. And like somebody brought up today, on some show I was watching on Fox News, they have already, Biden's administration has put aside $600 billion to address climate issues. You tell me how they're going to change the climate. They can't do shit. They can't do anything. Anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself because, like I said, this is what the show is going to be about tomorrow. I already have that planned out. It's a wonderful thing about these long weekends is that I get so much material. I can do plan out more than one day. But anyway, like I said, we seem to have lost our sense of purpose. I don't know if it's entirely religion. What's occurred to me, and I've talked about this before, is I think America is such an affluent society that essentially nobody really has to struggle anymore for anything. I look at all these protesters, and I even looked at I mentioned this. I went to a funeral a couple of weeks ago of a memorial service for a guy who I will basically describe as an old hippie. He from the 1960s. He was in his late 70s. He passed away in his late 70s, about 10 years older than me. I grew up next door to this guy. So, you know, his heyday of youth was the 1960s when all this stuff was going on. And what the thing that struck me about the funeral is I noticed that not only were all his cohorts, his peers, they were all old hippies too. Yeah, that's to be understandable. The one thing that was really, really odd is I realized that all of them came from either affluent or wealthy families. These people, because I grew up in proximity to this guy, even though he was way older than me, we weren't really friends. These people were either downright wealthy, in the case of a few of them, inherited money from their parents, and I knew where their parents got their money. One guy was a famous scientist, made a fortune inventing nuclear devices. And the others, although they weren't wealthy, they were very, very definitely well-to-do. They were affluent, you know. And then I look at all these kids on these college campuses protesting pro-Hamas, which is the stupidest thing ever, just stupid. And I'm thinking, these kids have never had to work a day in their lives. These kids are not struggling to get through school. They're not. Their parents are paying for it lock, stock, and barrel, and they are either coming from wealthy or affluent families. And look how this has affected. No one in America struggles for money. Well, see, I'm making a generalization here. I know that's not true. I know there's people, you know, in San Francisco, there's people living on the street. I know that. However, in that case, too, and pretty much everyone in San Francisco has said this, that's mostly a drug issue, not really an issue of economics per se. Most of those people are drug addicts. It's not just that they're poor. They're poor because they're drug addicts. So we don't, you know, there's a lot of money floating around America, and we don't really struggle for anything anymore. You're going to hate me for saying this, but struggle can give your life meaning. It can. And it's certainly better than the opposite, than not struggling. So, I mean, we all know the young child who grows up in a wealthy family who seems aimless is almost American stereotype. I have a friend of mine who worked in the local Hennepin County School District here. She was really high up on the chain there. And she said the same thing. She said, we have problems with two types of students. Students from really poor families and students from really wealthy families. She told me this. And she said, actually, the kids from wealthy families were actually more screwed up than the kids from poor families. Especially because there's a lot of people who work for the almighty dollar and then ignore their children a lot. And then, unfortunately, because of this, and I've seen, I never had children myself. My sister has, and I have, like I said, I have a lot of nieces and nephews. And so I've seen this like third hand, because I have to say, the people in my family, extended family, have done a pretty good job raising kids. So their kids don't seem to have this problem. But I have seen now, the opposite of that, and that's the helicopter parent. We have people who didn't pay enough attention to their kids, and now we have people who've paid too much attention to their kids, where their kids don't have a moment edgewise. You know, we joked about this, and this came up on Thanksgiving too at one of the dinners, about the fact that when we were growing up, famously, I grew up in a small town, but my wife did not. My wife grew up here in Minneapolis. But it was pretty much the same, and that is, and now it sounds almost brutal to say that basically your parents said, especially during the summer when you're out of school, they say, get out of the house, come back at 5 o'clock. And they were serious. They didn't want us around. Just leave. Get on your bike. Go somewhere. And we did that. We had all sorts of wonderful adventures, all group of kids, group of boys, kind of like Stand By Me, that sort of that movie sort of thing. It's like, yeah, we went off and we did stuff, And then at 5 o'clock we came back, or in the case of the small town I lived in, every mother on the block had a certain call for their kids. It was like pig calling at the state fair. It was just stupid. My God, I mean, it's hilarious. My mother, she's been on the show, 99 years old. She was from Eastern Europe, and she had this, still does, this really thick Eastern European accent. And she, Jimmy! She's yelling across the prairie, and every mother had a distinctive yell, so we knew who was yelling, come back at 5 o'clock. And that now that seems almost cruel, but it gave us a sense of self-determination and direction and the ability to figure things out on the fly, kind of. So now you have the kind of the worst of both worlds. You have either kids are basically ignored by their parents, who basically don't feel loved. They don't know that's a problem, but that is the problem. And then you have parents who have seen this happen, and then they can completely go the opposite direction. And that is they're helicopter parents, and they plan every freaking moment of their child's day, and their child doesn't have a chance to think independently at all. And these kids go to college, and now they're protesting for Hamas. There you go. It's unbelievable. The stupidity of these children, I find mind-boggling. Just mind-boggling. I mean, the thing is, and here's the deal. You're talking about my friend, the old hippie from the 1960s. We did this 60 years ago, too. There was a huge difference. First of all, we protested the Vietnam War, and history has pretty much shown that the young people were right about that. The war was pointless. It was 55,000 people essentially died for nothing. The kids were right. That was one. And secondly, it's like, I kind of hate to say this, but I do truly, I know you're going to think I'm trying to be cute here, but I'm not. In some ways, the whole Summer of Love, the whole 1960s thing was basically a giant ruse run by a bunch of young men trying to get laid. Because you have to understand, the birth control pill became available in 1960, and all of a sudden people thought, oh my God, we can have sex and there'll be no consequences. And so let's do that. And of course, all the people saying that are the guys. Let's have some sex with no consequences. So that was those were the differences. And now you have kids who are raised by, they've been brainwashed essentially by far leftist instructors and professors. And they seem to think what they're doing is the right thing. And they're so wrong, it's unbelievable. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens 20, 30 years from now. First of all, about half of them will realize they were wrong. You know, the other half won't. The other half will continue. But I foresee that 30 years from now, about half of these people are still going to be pulling this shit. They're still going to be protesting. They're still going to be blocking the freeway. They're still going to be doing it. They're going to be like 50, 60 years old. They will still be doing this because they will think it's righteous, you know, whereas the other half will think they're nuts. And this is pretty much what happens all the time. I've come to the conclusion that, unfortunately, there's been no surveys or polls done about this. And if I had the money, I'd commission one in a heartbeat. And that is, how many conservatives are former liberals? Because the problem is, if you want to call it a problem, virtually everybody comes out of the womb with a liberal mindset. Almost everybody. And this is one of the reasons that the Democrats are try to push the voting age younger and younger, because they realize almost all those people are going to vote for them. They realize that, you know. When you do that, as people get older, some people bolt. I did, you know, and it's no secret at all that as people get older, more people become more conservative. This is a general trend, and it always has been. You know, I'd be really curious to see how many people, conservatives or former liberals. I'd say about half is my guess. Whereas you've hardly ever seen the opposite. I've known two people in my life who were conservative and switched to liberal. I know two. And the interesting thing is both those guys had something in common. They worked in extremely large corporate structures. And as far as I can tell, I think what happened is they saw their employees treated badly. That's the best I can figure out here. One of these guys I knew quite well. One of them was just an acquaintance. I think that was the thing. It was kind of like a labor issue. And then here's the amazing thing. It's like the Democratic Party, for years and years, was the party of the people. It was, you know, it isn't anymore. Now the roles of the two parties have generally kind of switched. And that's really bizarre too. You know, I mean, now the Democratic Party is the party of elitists. I mean, it just is. Whereas the Republican Party has become the party of the grassroots citizen or the working class Joe, you know? And how did that happen? And so it's just funny how things work, you know? But at any rate, I'd be interested to see what that poll is. And so the reason I brought that up is because it gets down to the half and half thing. I mean, you know, Greg Gutfeld calls this the prison of two ideas. And that is, it's not an either-or scenario. It isn't. Excuse me. Like I said, about half of these kids, half of them will grow up and change, and half of them won't. I mean, I have no idea what the exact percentage is going to be, obviously, but I'm just ballpark figures here. That's roughly what's going to happen. That's half of them, 40 years from now, will still be blocking the freeway, protesting for Palestine or whatever the fuck is going on that time. It's going to happen. And so now are you looking at our friend Jazz Shaw, who comes on this show regularly. He wrote a piece today in Hot Air where he's a weekend editor. Unfortunately, I would post that link to that on our blog, but it's for the VIP. It's for the paid members only. But the headline of that is Our Descent into Barbarism. And his point is that we are descending into barbarism. We are. I mean, it's to the point now where these mass smash and grabs at department stores where they're looted, you know, by groups of 20, 50, 60 people, almost always kids. Let's be honest. Let's be blunt. Almost all these people are looting these shows. These stores are under 25 years old. Closing down a freeway for a protest. It's coming to the point where this stuff's almost become normalized. And in some ways, you know, that's the point of the people doing it. That's what they want. They want to normalize this chaos. That's one of the things they want to do. And he, you know, he said in this piece, he says that, well, the problem is that once you start to slip a little bit in this area, there's nothing to stop you from slipping all the way. And he's right. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we had a problem here. You know, if you're going to make theft under $950 legal, why should anybody not do it? And that's his point too. More and more people will do it because there's no ramifications to not doing it. Our other friend from Hot Air, David Strom, he wrote a piece today. And this I am going to post on our blog at chimandnight.com. And it's called More Media Malpractice. And it's him, you know, he comes on the show about once every 6 weeks. Jazz does too. Not together, they come separately. Especially Jazz is a particularly interesting beat because not only does he write about conservative politics, he also writes about the UFO phenomena, both from a scientific and from a political point of view. And I'm going to end the show with a couple things he wrote during the weekend because there is some movement in the UFO area, and those of you who have never seen the show before, I talk a lot about that. Because the fascinating thing about the UFO thing, if you've been in it as long as I have for the last 30 years, it's not just about little green men from outer space. There's a lot of political machinations that goes on, and a lot of that stuff is indicative of stuff going on in larger society. That's one of the most fascinating things about it. I mean, I personally am fascinated by the little green men from outer space, but still, this is like, you know, we'll get to that later. But anyway, Strom is writing about the fact that a bunch of mainstream media outlets basically lied about about this hostage exchange that happened. So he called Reuters called the hostages that Israel sent back to Hamas soldiers, and that's completely not true. They were criminals that were captured over time for all sorts of different crimes that had nothing to do with Hamas or fighting the war at all. And he talks about how they, and then when they were discovered, how they Reuters and the mainstream media in general, how they danced around this issue. They will never admit they're wrong, you know. And the problem is, as David Strom wrote about in this piece, is, and I have this, I wrote him an email today. I told him the same thing. I said, my problem, as is his, we both live here in Minneapolis. Now, Northeast Minneapolis, where we broadcast the show from, is one of the single most liberal congressional districts in the United States. Our local congressional representative here is Ilhan Omar. Does that give you some idea? You know? Crazy woman. She's nuts. She will never be voted out of office here ever. There's so many liberals here who will never even consider voting for anybody other than a Democrat that her place is in Congress is assured. Although, I mean, there are now other Democrats here who are running against her specifically because of the anti-Semitic issue. And that's, I have to tell you about this. I mentioned this in the past. When she first was elected to Congress, what was that, 4 or 5 years ago? When she first won election, and before she actually came on January 3rd of the following year to actually get sworn in, there were a bunch of clergymen of various faiths, not any particular one, you know, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, who basically had a meeting with her and said, you've got to cut this anti-Semitic shit out. This is not going to fly on the national stage. Because she was well known to be an anti-Semite. She was well known to hate Jews. That was well known in the city. And they got together with her and said, look, you can't do this anymore. This is going to fly. And she listened politely and nodded her head and said, yes, I will. And of course, she didn't, you know. So there is a possibility that, and all the people, and I guess this is true of Rashida Tlaib too, the people running against them are Democrats, not Republicans, that if given a choice, they might pick another Democrat to lead the district, and that's the only way you could do it. I mean, I have no idea what the percentage of conservatives or Republicans are in this district. I'm sure it's well under 10%. I'm sure it is. So, And so the reason I bring that up is because Strom's talking about, he's talking about this on this piece today about the fact that, and like I said, he doesn't live in Northeast Minneapolis. He lives in North Minneapolis, which is a different neighborhood. But not too far from here either. My guess is as crow flies, he's 5 miles from her studio, his house. He said, you know, the fact that, and I have this problem too. I'm constantly, you know, a lot of my friends know I do the show. Almost all my friends locally that I associate with are almost all to a man and woman liberals, almost all of them. And I will bring something up or they'll reference something I said on the show. I don't talk politics in private and polite company anymore. I just simply refuse to do it because here's my deal. Unless I think I can change somebody's mind, I'm not going to bring it up. It's like, you know, and my friends have finally caught on to this. They were bringing it up, you know, and they noticed my hesitancy to respond. And at first they thought, well, you know, you're a pussy or something like that. And then they finally started to realize, oh, no, it's actually probably not good for, you know, friendship. You know, it isn't, you know. I do this show because I'm hoping I can convince other people like you, dear viewer, you know, that maybe there's something going on here that's not right. That's the reason I do it. But he said the same thing that I said, and that is the single biggest complaint I get is, well, your information is wrong. So, and he addresses the fact that the mainstream media now, and I'm talking about specifically like the New York Times, CBS News, CNN, MSNBC, NBC News, they blatantly lie now. That, you know, it's not, and it's not even that these aren't even honest mistakes. They are blatantly lying. And we know this from a fact by tracking some of this information. And they blatantly lie and their good Democratic acolytes don't realize they're lying. Because the thing is, and it's like, well, why would the New York Times lie about something like this? Why would they lie? They've been the newspaper of record for 150 years. What's in it for them to lie? Well, I'll tell you what's in it for them to lie. They're no longer reporters. They're activists. All these people, all of these news organizations are hiring younger and younger people because they're cheaper. They're economically cheaper to hire. And all of them are the same people who are out posting pro-Hamas on campuses, except they're 2 years removed because they graduated. That's what's going on here. So because of the splintering, the fractioning of the media, nobody's really making any money. I'll tell you who's making money: Fox News. Fox News is making money hand over fist. They're the only people virtually anywhere who are making any money. I looked through the newspaper, the radio, talk radio ratings last night, you know, and also we had Michael Harrison on our 50th show. That would be, it'll be 2 weeks ago tomorrow. He was our guest. And, you know, we at the start of the interview, I addressed this. I said, you know, I've been looking, all the companies seem to be losing money. He said, yeah, they're losing money. He said, because advertisers are bolting. And it's not so much that advertisers are bolting. There's so much media that you can advertise on now that basically nobody's really doing well. Like I said, except Fox News, because they're a freaking juggernaut. I mean, all that stuff you hear about their ratings, that's not exaggeration. Their ratings are, compared to everybody else, are absolutely through the roof. On a typical evening, they have 4 times more viewers than MSNBC and CNN does. I'm not kidding, 4 times. That's on a typical night, you know? And even during the day, I mean, they're crushing it. They're absolutely crushing it. I'll tell you why they're crushing it. 2, simply a good broadcast product. They have good personalities and people that are interesting and people you like to watch. And secondly, you can't get, for all practical purposes until recently, you couldn't get any conservative news from anywhere else, on TV anyway. Now you have Newsmax, you have OANN. They're not doing that well, but Newsmax especially. Now you have Newsmax. You have the First TV. You got that. They're doing okay. They got Bill O'Reilly. They're doing all right. So now the Fox finally, after years of being alone, has some competition. But still, it's habitual, and they're gonna. I expect they're gonna clean up for years to come. Until here's the thing that's going on right now. And I've talked about this in the C block of some of my shows. Now if you've never seen the show before, it's basically in three parts. I do this monologue here, right? I'm talking. Then we have a guest on, usually for about 30 to 40 minutes. We have a nice interview and a nice chat, get to learn some things about some people. Then there's a third block, which supposedly, and also you can do this right now. You can call me up. You can go to gemini.com/call or aim your cell phone at that QR code in the corner of the picture of the screen. The third block is basically for callers and also like non-news of the day. Usually the UFO stuff, anything that doesn't fit. And I like to talk about the TV ratings and the radio ratings, all that sort of shit, which is one of the reasons we had Michael Harrison on. You know, he's become a good friend of mine. I mean, Sean Hannity says he's the single most important person in talk media in the United States, and he is. I know that for a fact. But no one's doing well. That's the thing. You got all this is splintered everywhere. Now, I brought this up because of the New York Times. So people say, why is the New York Times lying? Okay, so here's one of the reasons, or here's the primary reason. They've given up trying to expand their audience. They've given up. So now they're just trying to throw red meat at the audience they have. They want the audience they have not to leave, which is the same reason, and this is absurd. Like Joe Scarborough last week on Morning Joe on MSNBC, he actually said, hold on, I'm going to pull this up because I actually want to quote this. He said that Donald Trump will start executing people in the United States if he's reelected. He actually said that in all seriousness. He wasn't joking. No, he said this. And people are saying the same thing now. He said, you know, this is getting so tired, it's hilarious. You know, that if Donald Trump is reelected, it will be the end of democracy in the United States. You turn on MSNBC, you'll hear that 5 or 6, 7 times a day, that he will end democracy as we know it. Has it ever occurred to anybody? He's already been president once. He's already done this. Did he kill anybody? No. Did democracy end? No. As a matter of fact, things ran quite well, thanks, which is the reason he's ahead on the polls now. And I have been an election denier. I admit it. I've used as proof the crowd sizes that Biden and Trump drew during the 2020 campaign. I'm going to gloss over that right now because I could talk about that forever, too. But there's a craw in my theory that, and that is, John Nolte brought this up in an article in Breitbart a couple days ago about the fact that when in 2020, Trump never led in any poll at any point. And we're talking about 2-3 dozen polls. He never led ever in any of the polls. Now, Trump is leading in the polls. Now, you can make an argument, well, that's why, you know, that proves that he won legitimately. But, the problem isn't really the whole election. The problem is the 5 swing states where he barely won, where Biden barely won all 5 of them. Generally, the margin was 10 to 20,000 votes in every one of those 5 states. And that gave him the electoral count. That's the reason he won. Also, I still can't buy the fact that this guy got 81 million votes. I still can't figure that he got more votes than Barack Obama. That still bugs the shit out of me. And just to go over go through my previous thing about crowd sizes, with one exception, 5 days before the election in 2020 in Pennsylvania, where Biden drew 900 people, he never drew more than 200 people to any campaign event during the entire campaign. Now, and that's actually being generous. It was probably, he drew so few people, they couldn't count them. It was probably even less than 100. Nobody showed up to see this guy. Meanwhile, Trump is drawing 20,000 people at every campaign stop. 20,000. And on top of that, this continued as Biden went into his presidency. For the inauguration, 2 weeks before their inauguration, they announced they were going to stop selling tickets. They weren't going to have people come. Well, that's because of COVID. No, it's not because of COVID. Because 2 weeks before the election, they only got requests for 1,600 tickets. 1,600. And this figure's out of the New York Times. That was buried in the paper, but it was in there. And another example, I think this is 2022. Biden stops at Ohio State University to give a speech. 30 people showed up. 30. In October 2021 in Lancaster, Louisiana, he stopped to give a speech at a manufacturing plant. Nobody showed up. Nobody. Nobody. Zero. I mean, he's, for all practical purposes, he can't draw more than three dozen people wherever he goes. Now, he drew about 500 people in Milwaukee a couple months ago or something like that. Okay, fine. You know, that's fine. Now, compare that, like Hillary Clinton, she drew an average of 1,500 people at every campaign stop in 2015. Now, it still wasn't anywhere near as good as Trump, but still, that's a reasonable amount, right? 1,500, you know, versus 200. Well, anyway, that's why I'm in an election denier. Something's fishy there, you know. Now, but like I said, Nolte brought up a very good point that might prove me wrong. I have no problem being proven wrong, folks. None. It's like I'm calling balls and strikes as I see them. If I'm wrong, God bless me. The few times I've had to make corrections here, I do them at the top of the show, not the bottom. I'm not doing this New York Times shit where I'm burying my correction in the bottom of page 67B. I'm not doing that. I do it at the top. So Nolte's got a point here, and that is during the entire 2020 election, Trump never led in any poll ever. Where now he's leading in most of them. So something's very differently changed. And I'll tell you what's changed. Biden sucks. Really, they can go on and on and try to spin this any way they want. But the problem, really, that's not the problem. The problem is this: the press is spinning it for them. The press has become activists. And this was the point of Strom's article, and I'm going to post a link to it in our blog tonight. That's the thing. So, yeah, so this explains why, you know, now they're calling Trump a murderer and the end of democracy because they're getting desperate. And I don't understand how anybody in their right mind could buy this. But the thing is, the liberals that watch MSNBC and CNN are obviously pretty fucking stupid. There's no doubt about it. Because, like I said, they know this is the red meat for their audience. All these outlets have given up trying to expand their audience. They've all given up. You talk about the Fox's ratings, CNN's ratings. Are in the toilet so bad it's not even funny. They're not even drawing. They draw about 500,000 people in prime time, and you have to understand on cable television, anything less than 1 million people is basically zero. That's the way that works. I mean, their ratings have gone down like something like 35 months in a row. I'm not exaggerating on this. Compared to their ratings from January 2021 when Biden took office, they've gone down 90%. 90%. Nobody's watching this. Nobody. Well, then you're figuring, well, they're going to go out of business. Nobody's watching. No, they won't, because that's not the way cable television, the finances of cable TV work. There's two different revenue streams. You get money from the advertising. Yeah, if nobody's watching, you're not going to get any advertising money. But you get carriage fees, and that is, every single cable operator, like your local cable operator, pays CNN to run to put their channel on their system, and they get paid per subscriber. And for CNN, it's about $1.50 a month, I think it is. Okay, there's 100 million people in the United States who have cable television or the streaming equivalent, and it's the same charge for them too. So you talk about that. So CNN gets basically well over $100 million a month without lifting a finger. Excuse me. Got that? It's well over $1 billion a year before they do anything. So it doesn't, they have such a legacy of success, which is, of course, the New York Times is the same thing. Why would the New York Times lie? They don't have to. Like I said, they actually do have to lie now. But people don't know that. Also, and I wrote this to Strom in a letter, and I'm not pulling this out of my butt. and that is the numerous studies have shown in the last few years that actually conservatives are way more correctly informed than liberals are. Let me give you an example. You know, all this George Floyd bullshit that happened 3 years ago. Okay, so here's a question posed to the public by pollsters. How many unarmed black people are killed by police in the United States every year? Okay, the real answer, or of course it depends on how you actually phrase that question and or measure the results, but there's no answer over 40. It's about 32 people, 32 black unarmed black men, because the difference are they not armed with a gun, or they you know, do you count a knife or not? That's the, you know, that's one of the ways you can measure that differently. But under no scenario is it over 40. But if you ask liberals, Democrats, they will say thousands. Thousands. That's because their stupid media outlets that they turn to religiously give them that impression. It's like, you know, mostly peaceful protests on the burning building behind the guy. The building is burning behind the guy, the CNN reporter. It's the same type of bullshit, you know. Well, this happens constantly on all sorts of subjects. And so the Democrats, the good liberal person, turns to their mainstream media outlets like the New York Times and NBC News, and they say, well, they reported that. How could it be wrong, you know? Well, it is. And the problem is they're being deliberately lied to. That's the problem. Just to keep them watching, because, you know, they're stupid. If you do what I do here for a living, or whatever you want to call this thing I'm doing here, it's really, really unnerving, because like Strom said, you know, we are making headway in the sense that more and more people are starting to realize the mainstream media is full of shit. Last survey I saw is that only 32% of people said they trust the mainstream media in the United States either somewhat or a lot. In other words, like 68% of them said no. So, you know, they're losing, and that's the thing, they're losing audience. And so instead of trying to, you would think that the logical business thing to do would be to, you know, get your ship upright and try to get more people to watch, but they've given up trying to do that. They are. So now, like I said, they're throwing red meat to the few people that are hanging on, and that means they lie to them. That's what it means. So, you know, once again, I mean, I've given up trying to explain to this scenario to my liberal friends. They don't want to hear it. They simply don't. And also because of the fact they're absolutely convinced that all of conservative media is evil. Fox News is evil. Breitbart's evil. You know, even though supposedly last survey I saw said that Breitbart is the single most referenced or linked to source on Facebook. Of anything, you know, as far as like links going to the domain name, Breitbart.com is number one, supposedly. Well, I'm going to wrap this up here. I've been thinking, you know, hold on just a second. Let's try a little experiment. I'm going to run the bumper to separate segments here. Here we go. How did that feel? Did that feel good? Was that good for you? Okay, so this is what I got to end tonight. I got a couple things. First of all, you know, I do a lot of stuff on science here. Last week, NASA successfully sent a laser signal full of data over 10 million miles of space back to Earth from the Psyche spacecraft, which is out, I know it's out somewhere, looking at something, I don't know what it's doing, but it's the first spacecraft that was actually fitted with a laser transmitting device. Now, you have to understand here, that doesn't mean it goes any faster, you know, radio waves travel at the speed of light, and laser beams travel at the speed of light, so it isn't any faster, but the thing is, they can send way, way more data simultaneously. That's the reason you want to use it. So they send it via light instead of radio signal, which is technically light, but, you know, we won't get into that because you don't want to hear about physics, do you? So anyway, they did that. They did this successfully for the first time. So that's kind of cool. That's very cool. Pardon me. Meanwhile, Jazz, our friend Jazz, wrote, like I said, he covers UFOs for not just Hot Air, but Salem Media at large. He wrote an article about, a matter of fact, I'm going to post this too, because this is kind of interesting too, about, it's called A Black Friday for UAP Disclosure. So what's going on here is that supposedly Congress, in the last defense budget, they put in a proviso saying that if you knew information about a black or hidden UFO program in the Defense Department, you were required to make it known to Congress. And in exchange, you were also immune to any possible punishment or lawbreaking that involving that disclosure. In other words, you could tell, because a lot of people are under security oaths. You could bust your security oath with impunity. That's what they said. We want you to bust your security, your oath, and tell us. Now, believe it or not, this is kind of amazing. This proviso in this Defense Act is being fought in Congress, and amazingly, almost everybody fighting it are Republicans. And this is kind of surprising, because it's like, so far, this has been a bipartisan thing. I mean, Chuck Schumer, who I just talked about, and Tim Burchett, they're on opposite side of the aisle, but they're both supporting this. Schumer's actually been really, really pushing for UFO disclosure. He has. But the people who are against this are all Republicans, and a lot of people think it has to do with how this money is doled out for this stuff. That it's like there's people, like, for example, the guy, I can't remember the name of the guy whose district who. In his district, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is, where for years has been one of the two or three supposedly top places where UFO technology, crash technology is sent, that he's against it, because they don't want to pull money out of Wright-Patterson and then his district and all this sort of stuff, But at any rate, the real takeaway from this is very interesting, and that is, so, David Grush went for Congress a few couple months ago and said, we have crashed spacecraft and we even have dead alien bodies. He said that right in Congress, and everyone went nuts for like 3 days. But the interesting thing about this is, like Jazz said, if that wasn't true, they wouldn't be fighting this. In other words, it's kind of a tacit admission that something is really hidden. Because if something isn't hidden, it's a completely moot point. Why fight it? And he's got a point there. That's absolutely true. You're right. It is kind of a tacit admission that something's going on. Now, I didn't need a tacit admission. It's been so much shit floating around the last 30, 40 years. It's mind-boggling. I've said this many times. I'm sorry. I got to do this again. Excuse me. Oh, man. I said many times that people say, well, how did you know the UFOs are real? Because I've been talking about this for 30 years. And for 30 years, people are making merciless fun of me. They have. I haven't stopped. And you know why? You know how I knew? It wasn't a feeling. It wasn't a belief. None of that shit. Government documents. There's a ton of government documents. Now, I have to tell you, with one possible exception, there's no government documents that anyone's ever found through the Freedom of Information Act that address aliens, like dead or alive extraterrestrial entities. Excuse me. But the UFO things, all over the place. There's plenty of them. Now, John Greenwald runs the Black Vault, and he basically spent his entire career collecting these documents. And there's too many to even mention. And then you wonder, well, and this is the other question I get. We're talking about the mainstream media, 10 minutes ago. Okay. People say, well, if these documents exist, how come no one reported on them? And my answer has always been, well, that's a damn good question. I do not know. I do not know why the press didn't report on them. They were there staring at everybody in plain sight. They needed Leslie Keen to get into the New York Times on the front page and run this article in December 2017, 6 years ago now. saying that, yeah, the government is tracking UFOs. They needed that. But when there's, I mean, mountains of documents talking about UFOs flying around, all sorts of them. There, I'll tell you the one exception, like where I said about there's only one government document I know of that's public that talks about aliens. It's on, and you can see it on the FBI vault, on the FBI archive website. It's the single most viewed document there. It's a four-page memo back to the home office. I can't remember, from Kansas or something like that. And I'll just, it basically says, look, we got this crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft and these three dead aliens. What do you want us to do with them? That's basically what the memo is back to Washington, D.C. And for years, the FBI said, oh, it's just a misunderstanding. There's nothing to this. It was just, it's completely false. Bullshit. It is not. Yeah, right. So you're going to say that you guys out in the field, they mistook, what did they mistake for aliens? What, corn stalks? It's like shit from Kansas? What did they mistake? I mean, it's the stupidest fucking thing ever. Yeah, sure. Yeah, they're teenagers. Oh, sorry, they were teenagers. We couldn't tell. Like, that's crap. But that's the only one I know of. But there's thousands of documents about, well, at least hundreds, addressing UFOs flying around. So I think Jazz has something there. I'm going to link to this on our blog at jimandknight.com too, so you can read that. It's interesting logic. He's right. Nobody would care if the stuff wasn't true. So. There's that. Okay, I got a couple other things here to close too. So, the Rolling Stones are going on tour, and their tour is going to be sponsored by AARP. no lie. And here's the deal: Mick Jagger's 80, and Keith Richards turns 80 next month, and they're going on tour. I mean, come on, could you spare me here? Do I want to see these old geriatric guys? Even now, first of all, I know they're in fantastic physical shape. Even Keith Richards, who should have killed himself 50 times over. From what I understand, they get ready for these tours by doing months of severe workouts on a daily basis. I mean, they spend months preparing for these tours because of their age. You know, okay, and I got to give them props for that. You know, Jagger's jumping around on stage. He's 80 years old. Okay, that's cool, you know. But I don't want to see him. I don't. It's young person's music. It was young person's music 50 years ago. He was the guy who said, you know, if I'm 30, just kill me. Well, you're 50 years too late, man. And finally, Kim Kardashian has broke the internet because she's selling a push-up bra that has nipples built into it on the outside. So in other words, if you're wearing a blouse, it looks like, you know, the kind of thing where you're cold, you know, you know, well, she sold out of them in like 2 days. And I'm telling my wife about this, and she says, well, nobody wants that. It's like, you don't want people to see your nipples. Well, apparently you do. I don't know, honey. I don't know if you're plugged into the zeitgeist here. Well, good for her. She's a capitalist, you know, shit. You know, okay, tomorrow, what do we got going on tomorrow? I'm going to talk more. Tomorrow, it's going to be about the economy and about how it sucks and how the Biden people can't admit that it sucks. That's what's on tomorrow. I'm hoping to get a guest for Friday and Saturday. I'll tell you next week, next Wednesday, we are going to cover the fourth and I guess last Republican primary debate. Now, there's been rumored that Trump is going to show up for this one. It'll be interesting because if I'm right, only three people have qualified, I think. We're going to have our usual panel, Jeff Meyer, Don Zorro, Tim Conaway. They're going to be here next Wednesday. That's a week from Wednesday. But I should get some people on before then, too. So, yeah, like I said, we like to talk to the people here. We do. You didn't call me up. Fuck you. You know, I'm sorry, you know, I've been thinking about putting in, now you can call here audio only. There's a pull, when you pull down to check your camera, or pick your camera in the preview screen, there is an option and it never goes away that says no video. And if you choose that, all we get is the audio from your camera. from the microphone. We don't see any video. If you're shy and don't want to be on the TV show, that's fine. But I'm actually thinking about, I didn't do this when we started because I really want to encourage people to call in with the cameras, but I'm not certain it's working. I got to be honest. I'm thinking about installing a regular telephone number where you can call in and audio only. I'm thinking about that. I don't know. You know, let me, the other thing, if you look at the bottom of the screen here too, you'll see that text and voicemail thing right there. So you can you can send me a text or leave me a 30-second voicemail at 408-458-5088. That's 408-458-5088. If you think that's a good idea, let me know. You know, contact me there. You know, you can also, you can send us an email at night@jimpeters.net. Got that? @night@jimpeters.net. But I would, you know, you probably want to run, you know, no one likes, you know, I know, you know, us old, okay boomers, you know, we like the email. No, I know nobody wants to run the email. I don't mind getting a text at all, you know, or even a voicemail. You can do that too. Contact me. And yeah, yes, I just swore at you. I did that. So look, everybody, thank you for watching. One more thing too. So on Rumble, we're just pushing 900 followers, but I think we've kind of stalled. I don't. We're at 887 the last I checked, but we've been there for like almost a week. So you know, I don't know if you're watching this on Rumble or something. You know, if you want to push the follow button, we'd appreciate it. Get us over 900. You know, that sort of thing. I'm Jim Peters. I do this Monday through Thursday night at 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific. And usually we have other people on. You don't have to listen to me for a fucking hour. Anyway, thanks for watching. Really appreciate it. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. I'll see you tomorrow.